Usually, God uses the natural course of things to accomplish his purposes, but if and when the situation calls for it, he is certainly able to give information supernaturally to those who need it.
This is Mission 66. I'm Rob Dempsey. Mission 66 originates from the ministry of Bible teacher and pastor Dr. Luis Seau and is produced and heard in multiple languages around the world in partnership with Transworld Radio. I want to encourage you to take advantage of a valuable resource by downloading our free study guide. This guide will deepen your experience with God's Word and complement our daily teachings from John Matthews and Esther Sisulu. To access your free study guide, simply visit mission66.org. Pick up this valuable resource and also support the ministry of Mission 66. Your gift helps sustain this program locally and globally. John Matthews is our teacher. His co-host, Esther Sisulu, gets us started today.
It's great to have you join us on today's adventure where we arrive at the second to last chapter of the book of Acts. And here we'll find the Apostle Paul's missionary crew on their way to Rome to appeal a false charge made against him in Jerusalem by the Jewish leadership. Now, they will be in peril for their lives and they'll be in the middle of a terrible storm at sea. But as we say in church, don't tell God about how great your problem is. Instead, tell your problem how great your God is. Well, our teacher is John Matthews. And John, thank you for leading us with the theme today, The Last Journey.
Esther, as always, my pleasure. Great to be with you all for this latest episode of Mission 66. And you're right, Esther, we've been going through the book of Acts, which is an historical account of the early church written by the historian who's a doctor. That's Luke, the same guy who has written the Gospel of Luke. And Acts is the only outright historical book of the New Testament. And Paul the Apostle, sent to the Gentile world, was imprisoned in Caesarea from the year 57 to the year 59. And when he realizes that his accusers want to have him transferred back to Jerusalem to try to kill him in some way, well, Paul then uses his rights as a Roman citizen to appeal to Caesar, that is, to have his case judged in Rome according to Roman law. And so Paul's trip to Rome is the last journey told about in this book of Acts. So let's read. And when it was decided that we should sail for Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. And embarking in a ship of Adramyttium, which was about to sail to the ports along the coasts of Asia, we put to sea, accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica. So as we can see here, they're going to take a ship from the city called Adramyttium, then head to Caesarea and begin their journey with Luke. As we can be sure, and Paul is here, as well as this man named Aristarchus. And what is their mission going to be like on this last journey? Well, the Bible is going to make it all very clear to us, especially because Luke is a detailed historian. So we have everything recorded here. And verse 3 says, the next day we put in, that is, dropped anchor at Sidon, which was located in ancient Phoenicia, where we could find the famous cities of Tyre and Sidon that were very well known in that region, which is known in modern day geography as Lebanon. And Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him leave to go to his friends and be cared for. And putting out to sea from there, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus. Now, the word lee, it's a nautical term, meaning the side of an island that's protected from the wind. And it says that the reason they did that was because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the open sea along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra in Lycia. If you could picture this map, you'd see that this journey first took them north to the region close to Asia Minor, where Paul began his first missionary journey, that's modern-day Turkey, and then they're going to change ships. Verse 6 says, there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing for Italy and put us on board. Now, Alexandria was a very important city in Egypt. It was from there that ships would take grain and saleable goods all the way to Rome, providing for the entire city with food that was produced in the Nile Delta. And verse 7 says this, "We sailed slowly for a number of days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus. And as the wind did not allow us to go farther, we sailed under the lee of Crete of Salmon. Coasting along it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lasea. And now they're going to be facing increasingly poor weather. Since much time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous because even the fast was already over, in other words, nearing the time of year when the weather turns sour, Paul advised them, saying, 'Sirs, I perceive that the voyage will be with injury and much loss, not only of cargo and ship, but also of our lives.' But the centurion paid more attention to the pilot and to the owner of the ship than to what Paul said. And because the harbour was not suitable to spend the winter in, the majority decided to put out to sea from there on the chance that somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbour of Crete, facing both southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. Now, when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete close to the shore. But soon a tempestuous wind called the Northeaster struck down from the land, and when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along. Running under the lee of a small island called Cauda, we managed with difficulty to secure the ship's boat. After hoisting it up, they used supports to undergird the ship. Then, fearing that they would run aground on the Syrtes, they lowered the gear, and thus they were driven along. Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo, and on the third day they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned." You see, they thought that that was it, that they were done for. "Since then, they had been without food for a long time. Paul stood up among them and said, 'Men, you should have listened to me and not have set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, "Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on some island." And isn't it interesting that God reveals how he's still in control of what seems an out-of-control situation, even in the midst of a lengthy storm, and assures Paul that he will make it to Rome, and that God is not only going to make sure that happens, but he's also provided for the safety of all who are on board. Verse 27, "When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors suspected that they were nearing land, so they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. After fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, 'Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved.' Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. As day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, 'Today is the 14th day that you have continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any one of you. And when he had said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Then they were all encouraged, and they ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 people in the ship, and when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. You know, this was no little fishing boat, was it? It must have been of some size to hold 276 people. And, you know, that's part of the lovely, intricate historical detail that Luke presents here. And he tells the story as an eyewitness because he was right there in that howling wind with the rest of them. Now, when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for the land, and the rest on planks or on pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. You see, this account in the book of Acts reads more like an adventure novel than anything else in many ways. You know, this was a night of terror, and Paul and Luke probably feared that it may be their last journey. But God, well, he was, as he always is, true and good on his promise to spare all of the lives as long as they remained in the ship. And Paul would be able to do that which the Lord said that he would. And that was to go on to Rome and preach the gospel.
You're listening to Mission 66. This is our daily study into the 66 books of the Bible, one chapter at a time. I'm Esther, and our teacher is John Matthews. And our adventure today includes the Apostle Paul's great shipwreck experience found in Acts chapter 27. Well, John, you know, I've actually heard people say that the Bible is just a bunch of lies, right? And that some have even said that it's a children's fairy tale book. But honestly, after reading the Gospels, and in particular, the book of Acts, we must admit that these are no fairy tales.
No. Esther, the Christian faith is founded on historical facts, and the accounts found in the Gospels about the life, the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ have never been successfully refuted. In fact, some agnostics have gone to the Middle East hoping to disprove the resurrection, but were met with an avalanche of documented evidence supporting the resurrection, and all the doubters would have to do is, of course, produce the body of Jesus, but that would, wouldn't it, have overturned the entire Christian faith. But they didn't, and nobody has in 2,000 years been able to do that, and never will they be able to do that because the tomb was empty. And when we think about Luke, well, Luke is the greatest historian in the New Testament in terms of detail and precision. He's specific on dates, months, names, places, occurrences, who the authorities were, what happened, when. The details are incredibly accurate. And archaeology, you know, has confirmed many of these details and continues to uncover more proof as time passes by. You know, it was discovered that during the Roman domination of the world, in many ways, there was a strong sea commerce on the Mediterranean, with goods being shipped from ports all over the Mediterranean, city supplying Rome, the capital. Not very long ago, dive expeditions found several sunken ships along the Mediterranean coastline loaded with supplies, you know, denoting that strong commercial activity, and stronger than we used to believe. And that is exactly what we've been talking about in many ways in Acts 27.
Well, I'd like for us to look at verse 9, because at the beginning of that journey, it refers to something called the fast. So what was that?
Well, the fast is the Day of Atonement, and that's Yom Kippur, the chief of the feast days in the Jewish calendar prescribed in the book of Leviticus, where it says that once a year, every Israelite had to appear before the Lord and afflict themselves. Now, this meant not only denying themselves regular food, but also were to make their souls suffer. That is, to take account of their life introspectively and reflect about mistakes, how they could improve, and what God has done. Now, nowadays, Jews all over the world still observe Yom Kippur, which takes place about a week or 8 days after Rosh Hashanah. That's the Feast of Trumpets, which is the Jewish New Year. So by looking at this description in the Bible, Esther, scholars have been able to pinpoint the exact date when Paul's sea cruise took place. So think October of the year 59 AD, according to our calendar.
Very specific indeed. You know, I think to myself, why did the ship set sail when it was pretty clear that the weather was going to be bad?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suppose there was a choice to be made, wasn't it? Winter is approaching, and along with it comes a cold typhoon-strength wind that affects the central Mediterranean every year. The place where they were located wasn't suitable for spending the winter months, so they apparently took a vote, and the majority decided to take a chance on getting ahead of the bad weather to Phoenix, which had a protected harbour on Crete, and they lost the bet. The wind, the northeaster wind, comes upon them, so called because it blows from the northeastern direction. And this wind had sunk or driven many a ship on the rocks. And Paul, Luke and the crew must have suffered greatly from the cold wind and the length of this storm.
You know, there's that instance in this account where Paul says that an angel had guaranteed him that nobody would lose their lives. And I'm kind of wondering why some people get messages like this. I mean, I've never seen an angel. So how did Paul know exactly that this was not just a figment of his imagination, but in fact it was an angel speaking to him?
Yeah, I suppose we could ask, couldn't we, how did the prophets as well know that they had heard from God? Well, you know, they just knew. And let's remember, the early church flourished, didn't it? Even without the New Testament having been completed for their benefits by this stage. And the apostles, well, they may have been given special grace in those early days because God was making sure that the church spread and succeeded from the off, from the start. And the book of Acts shows a specific plan being carried out, helped along by unseen hands. So God is making sure that Paul was going to make it to Rome because it was part of his plan. And usually God uses the natural course of things to accomplish his purposes, but if and when the situation calls for it, he is certainly able to give information supernaturally to those who need it. And in this case, God sends an angel to encourage Paul, who then encourages the rest of the people on the ship, and divine intervention was manifest in keeping all of them alive in spite of being shipwrecked. And this is the mysterious and incomprehensible way sometimes where God makes things work. He uses human obedience and then intervenes with his own sovereign power when necessary.
You know, something I was thinking about is whether one of them, for instance, had disobeyed and tried to jump ship, what could have happened?
I believe that they would have perished whilst those in the ship would have survived. And also, Esther, I think it demonstrates a bit of a spiritual truth here because the church sometimes has been likened to a ship sailing on the troubled seas of life. And the people in the church are like these passengers on a mission for God, but being tossed by the tempests of ridicule and outrage from the doubters and false friends even. And we may be tempted to get into the lifeboats of human effort, compromise, or popular culture. But unless we stay in the tried and trusted and true seaworthy ship led by Jesus Christ, we can't be saved. Jesus was with Paul in that ship. And Jesus is with us in the ship that is called his church. Where else in the world are we to go for salvation? Remain in the ship that is carrying the message of salvation. Do not seek safety or happiness anywhere else, because, yep, this boat is going to be rocked and battered from the forces that are against it, but it is not going to sink. And as long as we stay in his ship, we will make it safely to that peaceful shore.
All right, well, looking at Acts chapter 27, verse 24, we read that Paul must appear before Caesar. And I suppose that this does feel a little unusual, rather distressing for him. Why do you think that it was necessary that he had to do this?
Yeah, tough situation facing Paul, who knows that he's got to stand trial before Caesar. Now, in Acts 27, we learned that the ship in which Paul was a passenger is going through this storm. And the whole scenario appears to be out of control. Paul is facing shipwreck due to this almighty storm. And it seems that all things are going to end badly. We read earlier, didn't we, in the chapter that mistakes were made by men who didn't take the advice of Paul, and that led to them facing shipwreck. And it's as though the men, such as the centurion, for example, are battling against the gospel. It seems as though these problems are nearly insurmountable. What God has planned never fails. And so we actually see in reality, with the benefit of hindsight, that God is directing Paul where? To the center of the world. And the center of the world at this time is Rome. Once he's there, he will be in front of no less than Caesar himself. And what is Paul going to do? It might look like a tough situation to us. Well, he has a magnificent opportunity to be a witness for the gospel in the most important place in the ancient world during the first century. So it ultimately matters not that mistakes were made by men during the voyage. It matters not that they had to endure a terrible life-threatening storm, as tough as though that was, because God is in control. And so what God has planned to do, he will do.
Yeah, and you know, in this account in Acts, it seems to indicate that sailing would be dangerous. Why? I mean, was there some problem with the ship? Was the ship not good enough?
So first they take a ship, then they change ships. They then take an Alexandrian ship, which was a quicker ship. So there were 276 people aboard the ship, and it's important that we understand that at this particular time of year, you know, we're not talking about cruises on the Mediterranean or going vacation sailing to Greek islands, because people were coming from the Greek islands here, and the circumstances for sailing were not great, not favourable. So these ships are effectively cargo ships, and people who wanted to travel went along. The ship itself, though, wasn't the problem. The problem here was the timing. Now, the Romans actually said that from September through October, it was tough conditions sailing on the Mediterranean. Note, actually, that Luke says that as soon as they left Caesarea and arrived in Sidon, the winds were against them. Now, it's further known that anybody who tried to take a ship to sail from November until February, well, they would have, well, you just didn't do that kind of thing, because it was dangerous, life-threatening, full stop. There was no way to do that. It was just not done. So the problem here was the timing. And basically, they're saying we need to stop somewhere and stay there during the winter months, because the sea's not fit for sailing during those months. Now, winter in the Northern Hemisphere is December, January through February, even sometimes into March. So that was the problem, the timing at this time of year, sailing not great. And that's why this accident occurred.
What a great word, John. Well, let's get down now to the chapter summary for today.
Okay, well, today on Mission 66, we looked at Acts chapter 27, and our theme was on the last journey. This was Paul's last journey that we know of, the one that took him, Luke, and many others to Rome. And we'll see more about this journey next time when we finish Acts. But remember that no matter how rough the road or how troubled the sea that you're currently traveling in is, God's purposes, you know, they will stand. He watches over those who are his, and he is always ultimately in control.
Yes, indeed, our dear friend. Don't miss out on our next and final adventure in the book of Acts. It's coming up soon and we're really excited. We'll be with you here, same place, same time. And until then, this is Mission 66.
That wraps up today's episode of Mission 66 with John Matthews and Esther Sisulu. Follow their daily teaching by downloading your free study guide at mission66.org. Go deeper into God's Word and discover how each day's teaching can apply to your life. James chapter 1, verse 22 tells us to be doers of the Word, not just hearers. Download your free study guide at mission66.org and have it for our next program. That's also where you can leave a comment or make a donation to continue Mission 66 here and around the world. That's mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Louise Seahow. I'm Rob Dempsey.